Good morning and welcome to the Roundtable panel for this Monday. We start off each day with an open discussion of issues in the news and beyond. That's right. To infinity and beyond. I think that's the way that saying goes.
That's right.
In this hour, we'll start off with an open discussion of issues, and it's our Roundtable panel. And if I'm repeating myself, I apologize. Joining me for the discussion, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Hi, Joe.
How are you? WAMC newsman extraordinaire Ray Graff joins us.
What he said.
Yes, and our in-house political consultant Libby Post joins us.
Yeah, you got my last name there, Joe.
What did I say?
Oh, you just had a little bit of a...
Libby Post.
Okay, fine.
No, he said it.
He said it.
Okay.
There's no reason to take offense.
Wow.
I never take offense. I take a seat.
I have a little gravel.
Oh, that must have been it. Yeah, okay,
so
fine.
It could have been a preponderance of phlegm.
Thank you.
Did you ever raise chickens?
And my weekend was busy. Thank you for asking.
Yes. Good. I'm glad. Well, I hope you wanted it to be busy.
Yes. We did something every night.
Excellent. Well, you should get out and enjoy the...
Well, that's exactly it. We've had a very arts-filled summer.
Wonderful.
So,
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's highest-ranking aide has agreed to meet with federal prosecutors this month as their investigation into the disbanding of an anti-corruption commission intensifies, according to a person familiar with the matter. Larry Schwartz, who holds the title of secretary to the governor, agreed in recent weeks to meet with prosecutors from the Manhattan U.S. Attorney General. The Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office, the person said, a development that suggests investigators are interested in learning more about the administration's actions before and after the commission was shut down in March. Alan Chartok.
Well, I can assure you that this thing is not going away now. I've had conversations with people who understand that this is going to be very complex. And the only thing I want to say is as Richard Nixon and others found out, that it's never, you know, it's the machinations that go on after the fact that get you into a lot of trouble. So I'm pretty sure we're going to see a spate of stories now about some of the things that happened to members of the commission, some of the ways in which they were either rewarded or punished for bad behavior. I'm pretty sure we're going to see that.
So let's play this game. You are Preet Bharara. You have Larry Schwartz in your office. You want to ask him what questions?
Well, first of all, I'm pretty sure that when Larry shows up, and he and I worked together many years ago on Senator Ornstein's staff, I'm pretty sure that when Larry, or as the New York Times calls him, Lawrence, and he shows up in the office, he'll be accompanied by an attorney.
I would imagine.
Yes.
And it doesn't sound like a bad idea.
Well, it depends. It depends. Anyway, what questions would I want to ask him? What did you know? When did you know it? Have you ever, Larry Schwartz and the governor have been saying that even though they told them to withhold the subpoenas, and they did withhold the subpoenas, then they showed their independence, that's one way of floating it, by sending the subpoenas out to the people who the Cuomo people didn't want the subpoenas to go to. But yes, by that time, the mud had hit the fan. It was the proper thing to do in terms of getting the hounds off the scent.
You know, during the Media Project, you and Rex discussed this whole issue, and Rex made a point that I thought was very interesting, and maybe you could comment on the timeline here, that oftentimes you had asked Rex about whether the feds ever tip off the newspapers. And his point was, most of the time, in his experience, the feds or investigators, attorney general, will follow the newspaper investigative reporting. So do you think that this was well in play before the stories hit the paper, or are they following leads developed in the news?
I think it's probably, Ray, although I really don't know, it's probably a little of both. I'm sure that what happens is, and I've seen it a lot of times, the newspaper does an expose of some kind, and the prosecutors get on it. So do legislators, they say. As I've said before, I've seen legislators on the train up to Albany cut out something in the paper and hand it to the aide and say, write me something on this, you know, or do something on this. So I think it's possible that it's both. But there's one thing I'm quite sure of. There are open lines of communication between prosecutors and the newspapers.
Yeah, this is true. I also wonder who's going to fall on his sword.
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, obviously the prime candidate for doing that
is Joe.
Well, Prococo.
Prococo, something like that, yeah.
And Prococo, I think.
Yeah.
And Larry, of course, because now that can be accomplished in a number of ways. It's dangerous because if the person who was centered in on this now starts to say a lot, you know what I mean? This could be dangerous. So what you want to do is assure a safe landing somewhere where they're sort of taken care of so they don't have angst.
Right. A golden parachute with a lovely cushion underneath.
Yes. Right. You were going to say something?
Is right there any scenario in your mind in which Zephyr Teachout wins a primary, assuming she gets in the primary?
No. But she's going to get a lot of votes. Let me tell you about Zephyr Teachout. We've had her here. Probably more than any radio station. We've had her on again and again. We've had her on our statewide Capital Connection show twice, not once. So when I get a letter saying, how come you never interview Zephyr Teachout? Or that, you know, it's extraordinary to me that we get that kind of criticism. And I almost always write back and say, this is when she was on this, and this. Would it be possible to get an apology? I never hear again.
But is there
okay. So Zephyr, I'm glad you gave me that opportunity. Sorry, I meant to do that. Is there any way she could win? There's always a way in an election she could win. I'll tell you one thing. She's going to get a lot of votes.
She's going to damage him.
Yeah, she's going to get a lot of votes.
He's not going to have a mandate. He's not going to have 70%.
She doesn't fool around.
Right. She'll get 40.
Yeah, she'll get a lot of liberal type voters. Remember that she lost the Working Families Party nomination to him only when Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York, came in and gave an impassioned defense of Cuomo. But the party was ready to nominate her. The rank and file was ready to nominate her.
This was the unions and de Blasio.
And those people aren't going to forget
who
she is and where she came from, and that her Weltanschauung, her worldview, is closer to theirs.
Can I put one more hypothetical on the table here for you to parse? If that slight chance were to happen and Zephyr Teachout wins that primary,
yeah,
then does Astorino stand a much better chance of winning the election?
Absolutely.
Well, sure.
Absolutely, because Zephyr Teachout is to the left of the party, and the left of that, yeah, of the voters in the Democratic Party. And Astorino could then say, I represent the middle class better than she does, which is why it gets to be hokey. But you mentioned something else that I really like, and that is the effort to kick her off the ballot. You ready now? So Cuomo is challenging her residency requirement because she sent in a contribution to the Obama campaign from her mother's address, even though she has clearly lived in New York State for a long time.
Why did she do that?
She was sitting there. She didn't even think about it. She wrote the check and she sent the thing in. But in any case, they're trying to kick her off the ballot. Let's see. What's the right word for that? Stupid. You know why? Because people don't like that kind of thing. And if it looks like dirty pool, now not only that, but the Board of Elections just put her on the ballot above Cuomo's name.
Oh, they, so she
comes first.
Oh, that's great.
So I don't know how much that counts for anything.
It does. I mean, it does.
I'm going to say that you're the political consultant.
Yeah, it does. It does. Your ballot position does help. So it'll help her. It's not going to make her win. But, you know, going back to your question, Ray, it would be like if Elizabeth Warren got the Democratic nomination for president.
That's right. She would win many of the primaries.
Right. Many of the primaries, but not be able to win the general election.
Maybe. Because in Massachusetts, she runs for senator.
Yeah, and she
wins. Was pretty left, yeah, and Massachusetts has been known to...
But we're talking about
Northeast. I'm so sorry, dear.
Yes.
But I don't think so.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Oh, why? Because they elected that guy Brown? Scott Brown?
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. And a lot of Republican governors, by the way, including Mitt Romney. So they're capable, but they see in Elizabeth Warren the real thing. the real deal.
The real liberal.
Yeah. Right. And I think that to some degree, people like it when somebody doesn't fool around in the middle. They say, okay, I'm for it left or I'm for it right. Witness Mayor Moonbeam in California, Jerry Brown, and then on the other side, Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting to me is when you look at all of this is it's certainly taking the attention off of the corruption in the legislature. That's for sure.
It is, except that in this morning's papers, there is a number, it's beginning to leak. James Odato did a wonderful piece in this morning's Times Union in which some of the people who are being investigated in the legislature are being outed. In other words, the Moreland Act stuff was
sure.
already making referrals to the district attorney here in Albany, our friend David Soares, and others. So you get it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get it.
So when you say they take an attention, you know, in fact, if they start to name who the subjects of these investigations are in the legislature, that
well,
could
that'll
be
tough. Interesting. I didn't read the paper this morning because I...
You got to keep up every morning.
I know. It was just...
got to do your own work.
It's called about not keeping up, getting up on time.
I know.
Really what that's
well,
about.
You have to do what I do. You right. have to wake up in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I can't do that.
grab your iPhone and see what Joe sent you for tomorrow morning.
Right. Well,
now, one
you
of those,
actually did it early yesterday, now, which I appreciate.
Well,
I
you're very welcome. I'm glad I could accommodate.
Yeah.
There was one of the study materials I sent yesterday was an article about in the New York Times about Zephyr Teachout and about her strategy.
Right.
And there is a paragraph in here that I want to read and have you all respond to it. In some sense, Ms. Teachout's emphasis on corruption has kept her in a cycle of inefficiency. It is what has caused the media to pay attention to her, so she has kept talking about it. But voters don't vote as much from a place of outrage over this or that duplicity or brazen exchange as they do from a sense that prevailing economic paradigms have abused them. And it is not always the case that they see the connection between the two.
You know, I like it.
And that's why Elizabeth Warren is
who wrote
winning.
That?
This was written in the New York Times by a reporter whose name is not mentioned.
It doesn't much matter because the word paradigm always interests me.
Right. But that's why Elizabeth Warren is winning, is because she's talking about that economic injustice.
Well, by the
issue.
Way, so does Zephyr Teachout. I
yeah,
mean, I've had her
not,
on the radio like, for half hour.
Jhenea Belafonte.
Right. But the thing is that she's coming out. Zephyr Teachout is making the only thing she can talk about is the corruption to keep her in the news cycle.
Okay, but you're right about that. But on the other hand, she has over and over and over again talked about teachers, classrooms, economic, you know, priorities, minimum wage.
But nobody but you is paying attention to it in the news, in the media.
Well, we'll
that's
see.
The issue.
We'll just see about that.
Yes, we shall. But what I also found interesting in all of this is, you know, you talked about Working Families Party. They've been awfully silent. You know?
Well, they look, but kill
so
the liberal. What killed the Liberal Party, the old Liberal Party, was that they were owned and operated by a few, you know, operators. And the more that you saw them, the more their independence was questioned. If that happens to the Working Families Party, same thing's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Goodbye. Somebody else will come along, who will do what needs to be done. The thing about the unions are that they had the money to support the Working Families Party, and when, you know, so they get to call the golden rule, those who have the gold rule.
What I just think it's interesting because Cuomo hasn't done anything to make friends with the unions for the most part.
Yeah.
They pushed the Working Families Party to endorse him. So how is that all going to play out?
Because Woodrow Wilson said, no secret deals secretly arrived at. So something's going on.
So one of the other things that I find fascinating with this case, and I think we mentioned this last week, is that it's all moving very quickly because you want to hit the election cycle, right? So I would assume that Schwartz coming and talking to Barr and all of this is all fast-tracked.
Well, I think the thing is going to explode. I think we're going to start seeing people pointing fingers at other people. And you know, nobody wants to go to jail. That's
right.
For sure.
I think ultimately they're going to save their butts.
Yeah.
But it could be, look, Chris Christie is a great example Basically, he's escaped the lightning. He's kept distance between him and the people who were behind him. That's one of the things that Mario used to say to me. He used to say, when you're walking into an event, never take an envelope from anybody. Never let anybody hand you anything.
Except Andrew has already spoken.
Yes, but now he's not speaking anymore.
Now he's not speaking anymore. Right. But he has already spoken, and he's already said, this is mine. You know, on one hand, you can go after whoever you want, and then on the other one, he says, no, you can't go after me. Yeah. So he's already been out there. He's already on the record. Well, Christie never was on the record of, yeah, I told him to close the bridge.
Well, this week, of course, we're going to see our friend Lee Marengoff in the Marist poll is going to be out on whether there's been damage. And it's widely expected there has been damage. Because the one thing he had going for him, you didn't have to like him. Andrew, you just had to respect him, and you just had to say he would do what needed to be done to clean things up, and that's what he said he would do, and a lot of people believe that.
We will continue our conversation here on the roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Libby Post are with us. We welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable discussion. Libby Post, Ray Graff, and Alan Chartok with us this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Nice haircut, Joe.
Huh?
I didn't get a haircut.
Nice comb, Joe.
Thank you.
Nice comb.
Nice comb over. Notice you didn't say nice comb over. You
right.
Did not say
yeah,
that.
Nice comb over. No, I,
yeah. You have hair.
Yeah, I have hair. I don't have like the comb over.
No, do you use stuff?
Brill cream?
No.
A little bit of
little dab will do you.
A little dab will do you. No.
Oh, my God. I thought we were talking serious issues.
Well, just wait. We're going to get really serious. Do we have any letters to read, by the way?
Oh, letters. Letters. Okay.
All right.
I get criticized for the way I do this.
Yes.
And deservedly so.
No.
Okay. Well, is this...
I guess not.
Okay. Alan, we're going...
So I found that hair care products are...
yes. Have you tried the Grecian formula?
Yeah, helmet yes. Head.
We're not going to make it to Tango this year. Perhaps it is definitely on our 2015 agenda. Perhaps we can talk then. I don't know what that is. Okay, so now...
That was a personal email, honey.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that stuff. I don't know that stuff. Okay, then there's an Ebola expert available. No, that's what I got. You got something that I don't have here?
No, just...
Because usually when you ask me, it means you've seen something.
No, I have. I did not look.
And it's, what is it? What is it? Roundtable?
Roundtable at WAMC.org. Oh, yeah. All right. Let us go to what I think is just... It's a stunning story. It's a sad story. And it's also a scary story, and that is about Ebola in Liberia. An American infected with Ebola in Liberia was being treated and monitored in the U.S. on Sunday as doctors worked to provide care in what will be a crucial few days in his attempt to recover from the deadly disease. After a week after his first symptoms of Ebola were reported, Kent Brantley, a doctor, was in an Atlanta hospital special isolation unit. He had arrived Saturday, flown from Liberia in a chartered air ambulance, and he appeared in fairly good condition as he walked, covered from head to toe in a protective suit, into the unit at Emory University Hospital. Plans to soon bring a second American Ebola patient from Liberia in the same hospital were on schedule, according to the air charter company hired to do the job. So the condition is moment to moment. He's 33 years old. He's from Texas. He was infected while working at an Ebola treatment center operated by two U.S. faith-based organizations. So the question now is how much of this can be brought under control, and how much do we have to worry about this growing?
The second question, a whole hell of a lot. We have to worry about it.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things that I read about the disease was that it is so deadly that it's not easy to transmit from somebody who has it because they die. Because so many people die. And unlike, you know, AIDS, which is transmissible, as you know, and did really take off like wildfire. However, I think it would be crazy for us to assume that it's not going to get here one way or another by airplane or business person who's been there.
Or terror.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, but not necessarily from these two people.
Yeah. Now, the two people who were here, no, that's right. The two people who are here, I think, are doctors, aren't they?
One is a doctor and one is a health care provider.
Yes. Yeah.
These are the best people in the world when you think about it. These people are slated for sainthood because they knew what they were doing over there. And, you know, this happened to them.
The other thing is that we look at how this country has dealt with, well, of course, you know, 1918 and the pandemic, influenza and killing so many people. And then you have more recently both SARS and MERS.
Right.
So,
avian.
And bird flu. To the level of concern of not only of the people who have already been exposed, but to keep it within its where it is now, limit it to spreading, and also fully understand what it takes to treat it, all seem like things that need to be done right away.
That's right.
And so, that's what's scary.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is. And I mean, you know, there are cultures in which people kiss the dead people. And that puts them at tremendous risk, and the government has to, you know, forbid that from happening. And then the other question is innovation.
Right.
In other words, at what point do we really get serious about, you know, finding ways to solve these diseases? Do the people at the CDC get real busy in a way they weren't before?
Well, we have to depoliticize funding of the CDC.
Yeah.
You know, this government, well, the Congress and the president and all the gridlock that's happened has impacted funding for really important public health initiatives,
right,
and for making sure that the CDC, regardless of whatever somebody's politics is, has the funding it needs to be able to do the research and be able to do to develop cures or whatever it is, that protocols to be able to combat these diseases, because they will come here, just like every other disease has come here.
But big pharma, you know, is interesting in this. This plays a role also. In other words, to what degree is there an economic incentive for solving these, for getting these diseases?
Right now, only uninsured people get it, so there's not really a big economic incentive. We have already seen how pharmaceutical companies try to rip off the third world, and only under major international pressure do they acquiesce and make drugs available at a more reasonable rate. Well, and so, you know, it'll be interesting to see once Ebola, if Ebola comes here and spreads, what the pharmaceutical companies
it is the government which inevitably does the basic science on all of this. It's the big pharma. In other words, it's sort of corporate welfare in a way.
Yes.
Because they do all the work, and then the big pharma comes along and makes the pills using the government research. We had a guy on for an hour the other day. People could go to WMC.org, and it's with Dr. John Robbins, who invented, you know, some of the biggest cures, including children's meningitis, vaccines for children's meningitis. He talked about the politics of the health agencies themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the new guy becomes the head. He stops being interested in what somebody else has done. You know, this kind of
And not behavior. Only that. You know, when you talk about immunization, this wave of, well, based on junk science, we shouldn't immunize our children because it causes autism, which has been totally debunked. But still, we have that going on.
Here come the letters.
I mean, we had a measles outbreak in central New York.
No, it's crazy.
Where they haven't had it in years because folks in certain communities weren't immunizing their kids. And, you know, you want these immunizations, not that it's going to protect you against Ebola, but these immunizations will protect people from publicly spread diseases like measles, like smallpox, like these other kinds of things. And if we have the ability to make sure people don't get sick, we need to use it. And we need to depoliticize public health.
Yeah, but I think you make a number of good points there. Okay. Even though it'll bring on the mail.
Yeah, well.
But I also think there's a possibility that these diseases are coming out of the chemtrails.
The what?
Over Pete's sake.
I'm just making. Okay. I'm having a little fun.
So okay.
You'll pardon me.
I'm not sure what that was.
Well, you know, when you look in the sky, you see the chemtrails.
Oh, those.
Yeah.
Oh.
And there are people who think that the CIA is doing
right.
That.
You know, right. Well, they also probably wear aluminum hats, don't they?
You said that. That's Libby Post.
Libby Post.
Wow. Let's take a break. We'll come back and welcome your letters, I think.
Maybe.
Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this.
Support comes from Cultural Pittsfield, presenting Third Thursday, August 21st, beginning at 5 p.m., featuring an art plus industry theme, part of a citywide cultural initiative. DiscoverPittsfield.com. Stone Soup Concrete, East Hampton, Massachusetts, specializing in concrete countertops, sinks, bathtubs, furniture, and architectural elements, serving the Pioneer Valley and New England, stonesoupconcrete.com. And The Glass Onion, Block Island, Rhode Island, since 1989, offering apparel, jewelry, body care, books, home and garden supplies, and kids' gear, featuring local vendors on the island's main street, glassonionblockisland.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Libby Post with us. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We have been talking about a number of issues, including most recently Ebola, and we have a few letters to get to.
We do. Thank you, Joe. Joseph says, the more insidious danger of Ebola is that victims may take up to 21 days to become symptomatic.
Right.
The danger is a person may travel apparently well and display the disease after 21 days, and that's from Joe. And question, why does the Center for Disease Control, CDC, own a patent on Ebola, number CA27411523A1? With this, we start to see the structure of elaborate medical theater coming together, a global pandemic panic, a government patent, the importance of Ebola into the major U.S. city, an experimental vaccine, the rise of a little-known pharmaceutical company, and a public outcry for the FDA to fast-track the vaccine. If Act 2 stays on course, this medical theater might someday involve a laboratory accident, in quotes, in a U.S. lab, the, quote, escape of Ebola into the population, and a mandatory nationwide Ebola vaccination campaign that enriches, I don't know the name of it, but I don't think I'd read it anyway, and its investors while positioning the CDC with its virus patents as the savior of the American people. Yes, we've heard this music before, but the last time it was called the swine flu. And Tom says, Ebola virus is Obama's fault. I think that's tongue-in-cheek. Here's a thing on chemtrails. Those chemtrails that Alan brings up from time to time are actually called contrails, which is short for condensation. No chems. Good for you, Matt. Okay, let's see. Is there anything else here? Joe, do you see anything else?
I think we got it all.
Okay. Here's one about circumcision.
Ah!
How about the herpes situation in Brooklyn, killing newborns in the Hasidic community with the oral circumcision ritual performed by the rabbis? I don't know what that means.
Oh, I do.
Do you? Is it bad?
Well, there has been there has been incidents of herpes being transferred that way to newborns, but it's.
You mean by the Moyles, the people?
By the Moyles, yeah. And a Moyle is, for those who don't know, yeah. is the guy who does the circumcision.
Religiously.
It's a religious rite. But by and large, the overwhelming majority of Moyles and circumcisions in this country are done properly with very little health risk.
Okay,
and to the newborn, and I'm sure we'll get more letters on that.
And Ryan says, every expert I've talked to says Ebola isn't really a concern for developed nations because of our sterilization procedure and medical treatment procedures. And Gary says, the killing of children of Gaza has to stop. Americans were outraged by the Newtown massacre. However, by providing bombs and weapon systems, we are complicit in the murder of Palestinian children. Is this an example we want to set for our kids? And let's see here. Guess that's it. Yeah, that's it.
All right, we have just a few minutes left. We will end on this topic this morning. President Obama thumped Mitt Romney in the 2012 election, but now their political standing seem reversed during a summer in which Democratic candidates are keeping their distance from an unpopular president. This from the Washington Post. Romney is emerging as one of the Republican Party's most in-demand campaign surrogates. Over 3 days in mid-August, Romney will campaign for GOP Senate and gubernatorial candidates in West Virginia, North Carolina, and Arkansas. In September, he's planning visits to the presidential swing states of Colorado and Virginia. Romney is filling up his October schedule as well. Senate hopefuls in Iowa and New Hampshire are eager for him to return before November's midterms. While Romney is weighing trips to other Senate battlegrounds, at least one high-profile Senate campaign said it has produced a television advertisement featuring Romney ready to air in the fall. Democrats don't want to be associated with Barack Obama right now, but Republicans are dying to be associated with Mitt Romney, said Spencer Zwick, a longtime Romney confidant who chaired his National Finance Council.
Hmm. Well, maybe he's getting ready to run again. And maybe, just maybe, Hillary's down by the side of her bed saying, "Dear God, let that happen."
Well, Romney insisted that he is not going to run. His quote,
they always say that. Sure.
Quote says, "The unavailable is always the most attractive." Right? That goes in dating as well.
And what a guy! He just
you can tell whether he's going to run. Whether he puts the dog back on top of the car.
Right. That's right. And for him, the third time, you know, he thinks would be the charm because he really truly believed that he was ordained to win.
Well, Dick Nixon, you know.
I know.
Could happen.
Yep. And he doesn't really need to get into it until next fall.
And when you look at the available candidates right now on the Republican side, he looks fairly attractive.
What candidates?
You know, Ted Cruz.
Yeah, right.
I think of those of that group, not that I'm switching the subject, but I think of that group, we're talking the third Bush, is the most attractive that they've got. Jeff.
If he'll do it.
Yeah.
That's the big question.
And he seems to be distancing himself from that.
More and more.
Very much so, yeah.
And, no, but if they want you to do it, and they think that, you know, that's the way they're going to finally win.
And it was that a... I'm sorry.
No, please.
No, was that a rumor I heard? But is John McCain seriously considering? Did you hear that?
No.
That's the other part of Hillary's prayer.
Yeah.
I read that, and I have to say I was a little aghast.
I didn't read that.
Yeah, I haven't.
It's not surprising.
So
we've heard from Blaze, who says, "I'm just reading up more on Ebola from the Mayo Clinic. Thought I'd share some of this with you." No, and then they send us a link, but we don't read links.
No,
here. We read one sentence comments. That's what we read.
Right. And a lot of good information is available, especially from Centers for Disease Control, and you can find out more information there. Excuse me.
Great expectations.
Thank you very much. Also, we go to our final topic here, and this has to be somewhat with what we were just talking about, and that is demographics in the midterms. It's a widely accepted idea that Republicans are sitting on a demographic time bomb. The GOP is getting whiter and whiter in terms of voters it attracts, even as the country is growing increasingly diverse. Now, an associate professor of political science at the University of California, San Diego, doesn't dispute that basic notion in a new study of the electorate, but she does suggest that the time bomb may well have a very long fuse, and that in the time before it explodes, Republicans could actually benefit electorally from a consolidation of the white vote.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true. And the biggest problem that the Democrats always have is turning their people out. And if people don't vote, the other guys win. So the people, we know one thing, that the people who have the most money are most likely to vote. That's always been the case, that it hasn't changed. So if you get the people at the lower end, even though there are many more of them who don't vote, and then you get people on the defensive at the top, they do vote, you know, you say to yourself, well, why can't people who have the most interest in better schools and basically socialized health care, why don't they come out and vote? And the answer is that they don't, and they haven't, and they give up. And so the associate professor may have a point. On the other hand, We do see that Obama benefited greatly from women voters, from Hispanic voters that are around, and beat the pants off the Republican candidate.
The Marissa Abrayano is the associate professor. She said she has written this in Will Immigration Spark a White Backlash in America? Saying indeed the white population's growing allegiance to the Republican Party points to a very short-term future. One might more likely be highlighted by Republican victory than by Democratic dominance. And I guess the question is, so if you're the Democratic Party, what do you do to deal with this in the short term?
You get your people out.
You put money into districts that can be made to that can...
I'm sorry. That's my fault.
I'm sorry.
I never know whether it's
on. Let me say that again.
I don't ever know it's on or off or whatever.
Right. You put money into districts that have great potential.
The Bob Newhart show is starting.
Right. It's great potential to affect the turnout. And I read recently a piece about if the Democratic Party put just a nominal amount of money, say $1 million, around the country into some of these districts to make people feel empowered about going out to vote, they'd see a real change.
Well, yes,
that's
but
what needs
yeah, but it does. It she's right in terms of her, in terms of her basis.
You won that round.
No, right. not Libby right. The associate professor is right about the fact that in the short run. Those people who are most incentivized to protect their interests, to protect what they have, will do it. And it's always a question as to whether you can get these folks who need to vote if you're on the other side out. Now, they did in the Obama campaign. And one of the things I've been thinking about as time goes, you notice I drop my G in thinking because I want to seem progressive.
Like with the people.
Yeah, with the people. But think about that. They had a black candidate.
Right.
And a lot of black voters came out, which is why I think even though you're not supposed to say this thing out loud, the Democratic strategists must be thinking about how to do that again.
Well, they with Hillary, they want the women to come out.
And how about a vice presidential candidate?
Right.
And would a woman candidate and a person of color on the same ticket be a no-no?
Well, it's a good question and it's a gamble, that's for sure, because you do want to be able to relate to the white male voter.
Right, and pick off, you don't need to get everybody,
right,
but
you
some.
Just got to pick off. But let me just say, I posted something on Facebook this morning. There's a graphic going around with
about
Obama
a half a minute.
Looking white. What if a white president doubled the stock market and created 9.2 million private sector jobs over 50 straight months of job growth? Think about it. And it has ignited a war on my Facebook page by people who, this just shows nobody wants to recognize the inherent racism of what's going on
here. I've said it from the beginning.
And this goes to this conversation quite clearly, because the Republicans will they'll go back to the 1968 Nixon playbook.
Sure,
scare the Southern.
But
Southerners,
I'll tell you who's scared.
Everyone.
They are scared.
Yes.
And one of the reasons there was such vehemence against, and I think it is racism in part, against Obama is because a group of people came out and elected a different candidate than they wanted.
We are out of time. Thank everyone. And you can join us, roundtable at WAMC.org.